Red Line.
Russia and China are scheduled to begin their largest ever joint naval drills this week in the Sea of Japan, with observers wondering whether this move is a signal to Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe or to the United States. This is what we are going to discuss in our second section, Between the Lines, focusing on the most thought-provoking publications of the week. An article entitled, U.S. Navy on Alert, China-Russia to Launch Largest Ever Joint Navy Exercise, carried by the Washington Times and written by Guy Taylor, the author says that the Joint Sea 2015 No. 2 exercises will run through August 28th in the Sea of Japan off the coast of Vladivostok, and that the first Joint Sea 2015 operation played out in the Mediterranean Sea in April. He continues by writing that the drills will take place in the Peter the Great Gulf, waters off the Clerk Cape, and the Sea of Japan, according to Xinhua. Citing a source close to the operation, the news services said the two nations will simulate anti-submarine combat and air defense and other relevant missions, including the joint beach landing of troops. And finally, he concludes that the drills are not targeted at any third party and are not relevant to regional status quo. The source is quoted as saying in the Xinhua report, the drills are part of annual exchange program between the Chinese and Russian militaries. So, right now in our studio, we have our guest, Mr. Dmitry Babich, political analyst and journalist, to tell us what this all means. Hello, Dmitry. How are you?
Yes, nice to see you in the studio again.
Hi, as always. So, what's your take on these joint naval drills? Are they a message against anyone, or is this for domestic consumption and military cooperation purely?
I think that even now, even the combined Russian and Chinese fleets are no match to the American Navy in the Pacific. And certainly in military matters, Russia and China are not as close as the United States and Japan. The United States and Japan are formal allies, and they have been conducting drills for many years. Russia and China are partners. But I think the message from this joint naval exercise by Russia and China in the Sea of Japan, the message is that if the United States continues to pressure both China and Russia, they will have to come up with a military alternative to their American dominance in the Pacific. I think this is a pretty distant message, but I hope that it will be heard in Washington. Because let me tell you, this is the first time that Chinese warships, seven of them, came to the Russian main sea base in the Far East, Vladivostok. Just a few years ago, American warships were much, you know, they came to that place much more frequently than the Chinese warships. And I think that indeed we should also bear in mind, this is not the first joint Russian-Chinese naval exercise. The previous one took place in the Mediterranean. And in the Mediterranean, again, the Russian and Chinese squadrons in the Mediterranean, there were no match to the British fleet in the Mediterranean or to the American naval presence in the Mediterranean. But Russia and China wanted to show that we are there also. You should take into account our opinion. And, you know, interestingly, it found an echo from Egypt. You know, Egypt also joined exercises with Russia. I would like to stress that the decisions to cooperate with Russia in the naval sphere, these decisions by China and by Egypt were completely sovereign. Russia has no economic tools. You know, Russia could not bring any pressure on these countries to participate. The United States can pressure the European countries or Japan into cooperating with the United States in the military sphere. With Russia, it was a very voluntary, not alliance, but partnership from both China and Egypt. So I think the message is Russia is not isolated. China is not isolated. The talk by Mr. Obama about isolating these countries by his pivot to Asia, this is just empty talk. We are there and we can cooperate.
At this moment, we're going to turn to our lines, and we have Mr. Yuri Tavrovsky there, and he's a professor at the People's Friendship University of Russia. The U.S. has simultaneously stepped up its pressure against both Russia and China, and as a result, some are saying that the two, Russia and China, are now brought closer together and at a quicker pace than anyone could have previously thought. So, main question to you is, do you think these drills are sending a message to the U.S. in any way?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, Andrew, because it's strategy called Pivot to Asia started in the year 2011. It is pressure on China's containment of China. And at the same time, we Russians also feel containment in the West, in Europe. And by the way, this Pivot to Asia also is sort of containment of Russian Pacific Fleet and Russian forces stationed to the east of the Ural Mountains. So, yes, sir, Americans are squeezing us, both our countries, and we are coming closer and closer to this military cooperation. At the same time, you know, China and Russia do not share the same closeness in our military relationship like America and Japan has. Beijing and Moscow are not allies, nor do they have the willingness to form an alliance in the traditional sense. Both Putin and Xi Jinping several times repeated this idea that, yes, we are close, but we are not allies. And the navies of China and Russia are independent of each other, unlike the Washington-Tokyo alliance. There is, of course, a movement towards more military cooperation. So actually, the future depends on the America and its allies. If they'll continue to squeeze more, then there'll be more counter reaction. Yes, and maybe in the future we'll see something like Soviet Union and Chinese People's Republic having the 50th. You remember we had this military alliance, and that time there was even discussion between Stalin and Mao Zedong about forming joint naval force in the Pacific. So America is proactive here in the Pacific, and Russia and China are on the defense.
Okay, thank you very much for that explanation, Yuri.
Red Line.
We have Dr. O.A. Soon on the line, and he is a senior fellow at the S. Raja Anton School of International Studies at Nanyang Technological University in Singapore. Many military analysts say that the Russian and Chinese navies lag behind their Western counterparts, pointing to the fact that they only have one aircraft carrier, for but one example. What advantages do you think both sides see in increasing their naval cooperation with one another?
Well, that part of northeastern part of Asia traditionally has seen some actions, for example, a century ago between Japan and Russia. And then also in recent years, we have seen the tensions in the Korean Peninsula and so on. So with Russia and China joining forces, and in this case, naval forces, I think it has, for example, a stabilizing effect, namely the two superpowers of the region joining hands in securing at least that part of Asia, which traditionally has been a little bit turbulent. Yeah.
Okay, well, I guess my next question to you is, why did it take so long for both of these countries to hold joint naval drills of this magnitude? For example, why didn't we see this earlier, right after the end of the Cold War?
Well, because I think both Russia and China, at the end of the Cold War, for example, they were experiencing problems of their own. In Russia's case, obviously, with the breakup of the Soviet Union, there were a lot of reshuffling to do within Russia. In China as well, that was after the Tiananmen Square incident. China had to consolidate its internal affairs. But nowadays, with, for example, the rising economic power of China, as well as Russia's desire to, for example, reestablish its traditional strategic role in both Asia as well as in Europe. The two sides would see that indeed the room for cooperation. But I have to emphasize once again, this is indeed something quite significant, because we are talking about two superpowers which are neighboring each other, but instead of confronting each other, they are actually working closely with each other, for example, in something as sensitive as military cooperation. Yeah.
Okay, with these upcoming drills then, how do you think Japan, the U.S., and even South Korea are reacting to this? And do you think they feel threatened, or is this perhaps something that doesn't even really bother them?
I think, for example, in the case of Japan, which has some territorial disputes with Russia, of course, it does not see this positively, because, I mean, if you look at the regional geopolitical arrangements, it will be in Japan's interest to have Russia and China not working together. But with China and Russia working together, even strategically, even concerned in terms of military cooperation. Well, Japan will really need to reevaluate its own strategic position vis-a-vis other superpowers in the region. For example, as to whether it should be as forceful in its claims in those territorial disputes with Russia and so on. But as far as South Korea is concerned, I don't think traditionally they have a lot of, for example, strategic or military ambition in the region beyond self-defense against North Korea. So I don't think it will affect South Korea that much. Yeah.
Okay, so as a final question, Dr. Oh, do you think that Russia and China's joint naval drills could eventually carry over into, let's just say, the South China Sea one day, or maybe even the Black Sea? Because the first one was in the Eastern Mediterranean, the second one right now is in the Sea of Japan. Could they maybe be getting ready to enter into more controversial waters, if one will?
Well, for example, if Russia and China were to carry out joint military exercises in South China Sea, well, that is not necessarily something that is not welcome in the region, because granted that South China Sea has a lot of territorial claims, contesting territorial claims by various countries, including China. But for example, freedom of passage, freedom of overflight and so on in the interest of various countries in the region, because that is a very important trade route. And as long as, when Russia and China carrying out their military exercises, if they put more emphasis, for example, on anti-piracy, on humanitarian rescues and so on, that is something which will be welcomed by the region. As to the Black Sea and so on, of course, then you have to take into consideration the various objections by the European powers and so on. But as far as South China Sea is concerned, I think the presence of Russia is not unnecessarily welcomed by the regional powers.
Dr. Oh, thank you. We appreciate your time on the show. Dmitry, where do you see this all headed? I mean, like right now, you know, they're coming closer, as you mentioned. Mr. Kissinger also seconds this observation. So right now, it seems like they've taken their partnership from the land to the sea. So what's next?
Well, I think that everything will depend on the activism of the United States in the region. If the sound minds prevail in Washington, because after all, I think Washington is interested in good relations with both China and Russia. If the United States do not escalate in Ukraine, then I think we'll see some kind of a regional balance forming itself, and the Pacific will stay a region of peace. But if the hotheads prevail in Washington, if Mr. Kissinger is right in his criticism of the new American foreign policy establishment, he calls them ahistorical people, if they forget history and act as ahistorical people, then we can see more rivalry in the Pacific. We have seen it during the Cold War, and we can see it again. But this time, it will not be just the Soviet Union versus the United States. It's going to be China against Japan, Russia against the United States, China and Russia may be, you know, taking the ambitions of Japan and the United States. So I think it's going to be much more dangerous than during the Cold War. I hope for the best. I hope for the sound minds will prevail in Washington.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Babich. And right now, we end our second section about the joint Russian-Chinese naval drills in the Sea of Japan. So we're thanking all of our guests for participating, beginning with our in-studio guest, Mr. Dmitry Babich, Radio Sputnik's very own political analyst and journalist, Mr. Yuri Tavrovsky, professor at the People's Friendship University of Russia, and Dr. Oe Soon, senior fellow at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies at Nanyang Technological University in Singapore. Coming up in our next section, we have Joe Biden from VP to President. Stay with us.